Religions of all types say some sort of prayer while dining, and many of them, or even most of them, boil down to this: for what I am about to receive, let me be truly thankful. But what is thankful, and what does it mean to be thankful? When I was a kid, my dad was an engineer working in the then very new field of robotics. So here he was all day in a suit, and then he came home at night to his small but working farm. He was usually up way before dawn and still up at close to midnight. And we had all the stuff people imagine when they see a farm in their minds or on a cartoon. All we were missing was the quaint cottage with an outhouse, and that wasn't for lack of trying on Dad's part. But working even a small farm isn't easy. And since Dad didn't have the benefit of any helpful farm elves, he went with the next best thing. Us kids became his very own farm gnomes. From the time I was 6 until I left home at 18, you could have told me that indentured servitude had ended in the U.S. I would have asked if you had met my father. We were locavores before it was cool, homesteaders before it was hip. We were organic in all that we did, primarily because I suspect that Dad thought we weren't quite bright enough to handle pesticides. Homesteading was a way of life. My parents' dedication to healthy and safe eating and to responsible and ethical animal husbandry was absolute. Even to this day, I'm not sure what my parents would have done if a growing season failed. But as a kid and a young adult, I was absolutely convinced that if we didn't raise enough, we would be reenacting some of the starvation bits from Little House on the Prairie. So when we sat down to Thanksgiving dinner, it was with a massive sigh of joy and relief. We had done it again. We had made it through until November. Our hands would be calloused from a summer and fall of hoeing and picking and digging and canning. I had a permanent callus here from using a shelling peg to knock popcorn kernels off cobs and into baskets. We gathered walnuts. We had memories of the previous December's butchering, standing in the freezing cold of the barn and thawing our ice-covered hands by dipping them in cauldrons of boiling water. We made walnut dye, smelled the apples as they were pressed into cider, and cooked down into sauce and apple butter. We felt the burn of salt pickle used to coat a country ham. Almost everything on that table was our own. The only thing we didn't grow, actually, was cranberries. And that did lead to some yearly issues, because Dad thought that the only proper way to eat cranberry sauce was sliced in rounds directly out of the can. While Mom and I, of course, preferred the more refined and delicate technique of making a lovely cranberry mold. Dad won that fight once and for all the year that my 6-year-old sister got into the refrigerator and decided that the cranberry mold was perfect for the game she was playing at the time. Imagine our joy the next day when we unmolded it, only to see that she had inserted small plastic animal figures head down into the inverted mold as it was setting up. So the thing sort of looked like the blob after it had encased its victims. After that, we went for canned. But cranberry-covered giraffes aside, we gave thanks for what we had. And our thanks were bone deep, built of the weariness and the love and sometimes the hate that went into that farm. For what I am about to receive, let me be truly thankful. But true thankfulness isn't just a recognition of the origin of your blessing. When we sat down to dinner, there was always one more piece. There were always guests at our table. What is yours is not yours unless you own it so well that you can give it away again. The final piece in claiming our blessings was simply to give them away. You cannot own what you cannot share. The Unitarian Universalist Service Committee helps us to own our blessings each year by inviting guests to our greater UU table. The UUSC is a non-sectarian, not-for-profit organization guided by the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the seven Unitarian Universalist principles. Each year, they form partnerships with individuals and organizations that help to promote humanity and affirm the worth, dignity, and human rights of every person. Their yearly Guest at Your Table program is simple. We take home the guest boxes, even if we don't name them Bob, and we keep them out where we can see them, rather than, say, stuck in the hall closet. Each day when we eat, we put money in the box. How you actually do it is up to you. All collections are then returned to us and then to the UUSC, and they're used to help whoever the guests are this year. For the 2013-2014 year, the guests are pretty incredible. And I'm going to have some help up here at the pulpit to tell them. For any of you who want to visit these stories again, they can all be found at the UUSC website. These people and their organizations do incredible work. And the Guest at Your Table program is an easy way to ensure that that work continues. So John and Sarah, if you'd like to join me, they're going to tell us more about at least one of the guests at our table.
The job too hard. Walk off the wall.
Did you need any help? Did you need a mic?
I don't think so.
You're all here.
Do I ever need a mic?
No.
Okay.
Hello, Mr. Boss Master, sir. I'm here for work.
Well, it's about time. Here's your paycheck. And you're late yet.
No, I'm 10 minutes early.
Well, you're almost late. And if you're any more almost later than you were today, I'm going to have to dock your pay again.
Hey, you only paid me for 27 hours, and I think I worked 35 last month.
Well, yeah, but that's right in your contract. You know, didn't you read? You cheeseheads just don't read. You know, we have this problem with all the cheeseheads. If you look right on page 173 of the contract, it said that if you work 35 hours in a week, you get paid for 27. If you want to be paid for 35 hours, you've got to work 45. That's on the next page. Okay? So, why don't you go home, read over your contract again? Or, if you know, you crazy cheeseheads. You know, I can always find another cheesehead to do this work if you don't like
it. I'm just going to go talk to Nelson about this.
Nelson?
Yeah, Nelson Escobar.
You know Nelson Escobar?
Yes! Nelson Escobar has a long history of witnessing injustice. He came to the United States from El Salvador seeking asylum and hoping to find justice and dignity. He began working at a cleaning company in Arkansas, but he felt taken advantage of by his bosses. So he approached the Northwest Arkansas Workers' Justice Center to ask for help, writing a letter in English demanding that he be treated fairly. The letter helped him and Nelson stayed involved with the Justice Center. After spending time as a volunteer, he began working full-time to restore his community safety. You can read more about Nelson and the work he does in the pamphlet you'll get with your box or on the USP website.
Thank you. The next guest at our table is George Friday. George is a woman at 14. A teacher in her class referred to her by a racial slur and told her that she would never do as well as the other children because she was black and because she was poor. It inspired her to stand up for herself and the other students, 14 years old. And she organized her classmates into a group who believed that nobody should make others feel bad. The teacher who belittled her was dismissed, and the school started to pay more attention. This is before the civil rights movement. She still made her voice heard. And it made her realize the power of people working together. She is now a national field organizer for the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. And she works to help individuals and small groups create coalitions. People learn from each other, they share resources. They try to work to create a fairer world. They work with the UUSC to plan meetings of groups and leaders. And they're trying to teach more privileged groups to stand up for their partners. She's helped to start campaigns in over 30 cities across the U.S. She currently works with the Northwest Arkansas Workers' Justice Center to create relationships with other allies. They're working with workers' rights, civil rights. They're also working with other organizations like Omni Center for Peace and Justice. Right now, they're trying to protect the rights of Latino and workers from the Marshall Islands in their communities. They team up to say no to harmful policies, including a law that allows local police to stop and frisk anyone suspected without good reason. We are partnering with George Friday. We are having her at our table because she empowers people to stand up for themselves and for others. And you can read more about her on the website or as story 2 in your booklet. I'd like to ask Robert Ehler to join me up here. And he's going to tell us about the last two guests at our table this year.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Malia Villard Apollon is another guest at our table. Malia is co-founder of COFA Vive, the Commission Femmes Victimes pour Victimes, which means the Commission of Women Victims for Victims in Haiti. COFA Vive has worked for many years to help patient women and children who were victims of gender-based violence. Gender-based violence was a problem in Haiti before the January 2010 earthquake, but with thousands of homes destroyed in the earthquake and hundreds of thousands homeless and living in tent camps without lighting, security, or privacy, violence against women increased. Although COFA Vive's clinic was destroyed in the earthquake, Maya, herself a victim of violence against women, and her colleagues, with assistance from UUSC, continue their work. They provide immediate medical care to victims. They offer someone to go to the hospital with a victim, information on how to avoid infection and stay healthy, counseling and self-care education, and legal assistance. Although few cases result in convictions in Haiti, bribery and threats are often part of the process of the legal system. Victims often have their belongings stolen or destroyed, and COFAVIV can offer financial support and training in marketable skills to help women create sewing pieces and be able to sell their work. And they also offer programs for children and teenagers. Malia and her colleagues work to prevent future violence by training women to provide security in the tent camps, distributing whistles, building separate showers and toilets for women, and asking for more police patrols and lighting. Most importantly, they affirm the inherent worth and dignity of women and teach them how their combined voices, speaking out, can build a community free of violence. Danielle Noose is another guest at our table. Danielle experienced the difference that community organizing and farming can make as a child. Her mother worked as a community animator, which is someone who works with communities to bring about change in Haiti, and her grandfather, who is a farmer. You may have heard me talk about my work with USC partner MPP in Haiti, the Papaya Peasant Movement. MPP works across Haiti to educate farmers in sustainable and ecological farming methods. When Danielle learned about MPP and took one of their training classes, she met three other young people who shared her vision of a Haiti where people had access to fresh food and worked together to grow it. One of the methods MPP teaches is growing vegetables in containers made of worn-out tires. Danielle and her friends saw how these tire gardens could work in the capital city of Port-au-Prince, where over a million people live. Port-au-Prince is about half the size of the city of Waukesha, but Waukesha has about 70,000. So you can imagine a million people in an area half that size. Roads and transportation in Haiti are poor, and transportation is difficult. It's hard to get crops from the countryside into the city. Danielle and her friends decided to teach families in Port-au-Prince how to make these tire gardens and grow fresh food for themselves. They named themselves Guiat, which means Bright Educators of Delmas, which is the neighborhood in Port-au-Prince where they started working. With help from UUSC and MPP, they trained 60 families to make tire gardens and grow cabbages, eggplants, spinach, and other foods they could eat and also sell to others. These families then go on to teach others, so the community is learning from each other and benefiting from their work together. The Guiat motto is, "We are all one, we remain one, and we will die one." When I met Danielle and her co-founders, Emmanuel, Birna, and Adeline in March, they were searching for a location for a training center and a place to create compost and distribute compost around the city to the families they were teaching. This energetic young woman and her friends envision a youth program that trains teachers that will work with hundreds of more families, spreading good food, good health, and community building throughout the city. If you'd like to know more about UUSC's work in Haiti and elsewhere, talk to me sometime.
So as Thanksgiving approaches this year, ask yourself, who will be the guests at my table, real and metaphorical? What blessings will I be thankful for, not just today, but every day going forward? And most importantly, how will I work to understand that my giving is a gift to myself? Each of us is blessed in his or her own way. Some of our blessings are earned through hard work or deep thought. Some are ours by birth, a function of cultural privilege, whether we want them or not. But you cannot be truly thankful for what you have if it's not yours. And it's not yours if you cannot share it. Invite someone to your table, not just for the holiday, and let us give thanks. Adopt or foster a child, bring a shelter animal home. Reach out and let us give thanks. Teach a free community class, volunteer to help with an urban cleanup, and let us give thanks. Every day as you receive, let us give thanks, and may your life be a prayer. For what I am about to receive, let me be truly thankful. Amen.